Good evening. I'm Brooks Robinson, the Public Affairs Counselor here. I'd like to ask you all to please identify yourself by name and your organization when you ask a question. And it's my honor and pleasure to introduce Mr. John Bolton, the Undersecretary for Arms Control and International Security. I think you all know more than that already, so I'll just leave it at that. It's all yours.
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you all for coming. Today, here in Geneva, we had a meeting of the G8 senior group that deals with questions of proliferation of weapons of mass destruction. This was a group that was created during the U.S. presidency of the G8 and the preparations for the Sea Island Summit that was held in June, hosted by President Bush. The work that we engaged here today was principally follow-up from the Sea Island Summit, addressing questions involving President Bush's proposals to close loopholes in the nuclear nonproliferation framework, discussing issues like how to restrict the transfer of sensitive nuclear technology, uranium enrichment, and plutonium reprocessing, what to do about restricting access to states that have not brought into force the IAEA additional protocol, questions of strengthening IAEA governance, such as prohibiting states that are under investigation from participating in IAEA decision-making concerning them. We also discussed the formal expansion of the G8's global partnership against the spread of weapons and materials of mass destruction. The global partnership was established at the Kananaskis Summit 2 years ago to deal with the destruction or rendering safe of weapons of mass destruction materials and missiles in the former Soviet Union. Today we had presentations by nine former republics of the Soviet Union, in many of which the United States already has programs, but which the G8 is considering for formal membership in the global partnership. Since Kananaskis, we've added 13 new donor countries, and I expect that by the end of the year, we will add some number, 2, 3, 4 additional recipient countries in addition to the Russian Federation. We also discussed today regional questions, regional nonproliferation issues, including Iran and North Korea and others. I thought this was a very productive meeting. I had a chance to have bilateral consultations with a number of other countries, particularly on the subject of Iran and the upcoming IAEA Board of Governors meeting. The objective that we've been pursuing, the United States has been pursuing, has been to ensure that Iran does not acquire a nuclear weapons capability. And that is an objective shared by all of the G8 countries, as reflected in the G8 leaders' statement issued at Sea Island. So there's no disagreement on our broad objective, no disagreement. What we have tried to do here today and yesterday in particular was to close the tactical gap that has existed between the United States and what we call the EU3, Britain, France, and Germany. And I think I can say that we made progress in that regard here in Geneva. We have not completely closed the tactical gap, but I think discussions will continue over the weekend and into next week, and we'll see what we're able to do. The objective, as I say, the overall objective of ensuring that Iran does not acquire nuclear weapons capability is not at issue. All of us are agreed on that. So we're pleased that we have made the progress we did in closing the tactical gap, and we'll look forward, hopefully, to making some more. For my own part, I'm off to Israel tomorrow for further consultations, and then back to Washington. So why don't I stop there, and I'd be happy to answer any questions any of you may have. Yes, ma'am.
Kuwait News Agency. Since you're going to Israel tomorrow, sir, have you discussed Israel in that meeting? If yes, tell us what did you discuss. If no, tell us why you didn't discuss it.
Yes, we did discuss Israel in the context of states that are not party to the non-proliferation treaty. I raised it. That's basically the substance of the discussion. Yes, sir.
Richard Waddington, Reuters. I wonder where you, if you could just say where these discussions are going to continue over the weekend, whether it's here or it's in Vienna. And I wonder whether you could give any more detail on exactly how this gap has been narrowed, what specifically is...
I think the discussions will be in cyberspace and over the telephone in a variety of different locations. And I don't really want to get into the specifics because the questions of closing the tactical gap, I think, are best addressed in private consultations. But that's very clearly our objective. I think the EU3 and others share that objective. We have a ways to go. I don't want to overstate this. I don't want to create any misimpressions. We're not finished yet, but I do think we've made some progress here the past couple of days. Yes, sir.
Couple of questions. My name is D. Ravikant. I work for an Indian newspaper, Deccan Herald, from Bangalore. A couple of questions. First and foremost, what exactly is the U.S. stand on FMCT in regard to verification? Because part of the problem is that if you don't have internationally credible and non-discriminatory verification mechanisms, what exactly is the U.S. strategy in terms of containing the proliferation? Are you just emphasizing on the counter-proliferation as against non-proliferation, which is being sought about? I have a follow-up question depending upon your answer.
Well, I'm tempted to say you should speak with Ambassador Sanders, who's here on a permanent basis and could address that question at length, and you should talk to her if you haven't, but I will, although she'll be in Vienna next week, I will say that we had engaged in an extremely thorough and extensive review within the United States government on the question of whether the FMCT was verifiable, and concluded that we didn't think we had sufficient confidence in verification that should be part of the treaty. But we have said and expressed here in the CD that we continue to search for a workable FMCT, and that's the position we've taken. So how is my answer, and does that mean there's a second question?
Yeah, exactly. There is a second.
I'm not surprised.
I'm sorry. The second question is straight and simple, that those who are members of the IAEA and those who are outside the so-called, those who are in the NPT, then you have two categories. You have the P5 who don't have to go through verification, and then you are saying that there has to be a verification for those who are outside the P5. So would there be credibility in what you are doing, say, in regard to Iran, forcing a country to subject to verification, while the Big Five are not ready to accept internationally credible verification mechanisms?
Well, I don't agree with the premise of your question, since the five permanent members who are under the explicit terms of the Non-Proliferation Treaty, legitimate nuclear weapon states, recognized as such by every state party to the treaty, have undertaken, and the United States is one of them, to accept the additional protocol and to accept the circumstances and verification in regard to non-military programs. The non-nuclear weapon states, all the other parties to the NPT, if they're in compliance with the treaty, by definition don't have any military programs, so that the verification mechanisms are not fundamentally different on those aspects. Yes, ma'am.
Deborah Haynes from AFP. You said you didn't want to go into too many details about the outstanding gap, but could you just say what is the issues that are the outstanding issues, please?
Yeah. Well, I think the position of the United States for quite some time during the last five meetings of the Board of Governors of the IAEA, five meetings, and now during the sixth meeting, has been that the clandestine Iranian nuclear weapons program poses a threat to international peace and security, and that threat crosses the jurisdiction of the Security Council, which should take the matter up. The EU3 and others have been pursuing a different route. I think the Iranians in the past six or so weeks have demonstrated that they don't intend to carry through with the premise of the EU3 deal. The EU3 are still working that issue. And that has been the tactical difference between us, how we handle the Iranian program with respect to the Security Council. Our view, and I think it's the view of the EU3 as well, is that if we can close the tactical gap, we can increase the likelihood that we can achieve our overall objective, which is to preclude the Iranians from achieving nuclear weapons status. And that really is what we want to focus on, and that's what we've been discussing here the past couple of days. Yes, sir.
Mr. Secretary, Alexander Higgins of Associated Press. Is it going to be possible to have the Board of Governors vote next week that Iran is in violation of the NPT? Is that still reasonable?
Well, I don't. You know, the dynamic in the board has demonstrated in the past five meetings a very strongly negative attitude on Iran's nuclear weapons program, finding repeated instances of lack of Iranian cooperation, of obstructing IAEA inspectors, not disclosing important aspects, changing their story from month to month. And I think that there are clearly extensive questions about the Iranian program that remain unanswered. As I say, it's been our consistent view throughout this process that we should have the Iranian program referred to the Security Council. But the IAEA board is a political process. We'll see what happens next week. There's a difference, I think, between our stating what our position is and what's been achievable in the IAEA board. That's one reason among many why we're working as hard as we are, and the EU3 are working as hard as they are to close the tactical gap, and why we're pleased at the progress we've made here the past couple of days. Yes, ma'am. This ma'am down here, I'll come to you in a moment. That, you.
Lisa Schlein, Voice of America. I'd like to ask you if the board doesn't come out with some kind of an agreement that the United States agrees with, if Iran still refuses to have inspections, will you push for sanctions at the Security Council? And what form are these sanctions likely to take?
Yeah. Well, let me just say that the issue of what the Security Council does or might do when the question of the Iranian nuclear weapons program comes before it is one that we have considered very carefully and consulted with a number of governments about. It is not the case that bringing Iran to the Security Council automatically results in the imposition of sanctions. If it were, in fact, that easy, we'd be in very different circumstances. What we're saying is that Iran's program, amounting as it does to a threat to international peace and security, is of sufficient gravity that we want to put the Iranian program at center stage in the world spotlight in the forum of the Security Council, the principal political body of the United Nations, the body of the United Nations charged with dealing with threats to international peace and security. And we think just politically the international dynamic would change dramatically if Iran were in center stage in New York. The question of what happens after that is largely in Iran's hands. If they were to truly give up the pursuit of nuclear weapons, there's a way to deal with that. And we, I think, demonstrated that in the case of Libya. But the first step is to get this into the Security Council, where the Iranians are going to have to explain to the whole world what exactly it is they're up to. Now, this over here.
This one, yes. Frances Williams from the Financial Times. I wonder whether the revelations by South Korea earlier this week were discussed in your meetings here in Geneva, and what is the U.S. position?
The question about South Korea was discussed, and our view is that there's still much we don't know about the question in South Korea. South Koreans informed us just a few weeks ago. That was our first knowledge of it. The IAEA has been engaged in discussions and examinations within South Korea. That process continues. I think I can give you in part a procedural answer to the question, is that our understanding is that next week at the IAEA there will be a brief, probably verbal report on what the IAEA has learned about at least the South Korean experiment in uranium enrichment, which was the first disclosure a week or so ago. And it's the general expectation, it was certainly, I think, the view of the G8, that the IAEA should continue its investigation and give a formal written report to the Board of Governors, perhaps by the November meeting. We're not setting an arbitrary deadline. If it takes longer, we're prepared for that. But it would not be unreasonable to ask for a written report that lays out the facts and circumstances in more detail than we currently know by the November board meeting, which takes place at the end of the month. Because we're still interested ourselves within the United States in knowing all of the facts, we don't have a formal position on it. But one thing I can assure you, we will not allow a double standard in terms of how we treat violations of safeguards agreements. And there are a variety of steps we might take. I think the South Koreans have shown cooperation. They brought this issue forward to the IAEA and have been cooperating with the IAEA. But despite the chatter in some quarters, I want to be very clear that the United States will proceed to its decision on how to treat this matter, considering the facts that the IAEA brings to us, but with no double standard at all. Yes, ma'am.
Yuki Hasegawa from Yomiuri Shimbun. I also want to ask about North Korea. You mentioned that you discussed the issue of North Korea. Could you elaborate on what you discussed and whether there were achievements on any other points?
Basically, we exchanged views on the status of the six-party talks, updating each other since our last meeting of our senior group, which was in early July. Subject of what comes next in the six-party talks, whether there will be another round by the end of September as the parties agreed at the third round of six-party talks, is in discussion now. My colleague Jim Kelly is in Tokyo. He'll be going on to Beijing, I believe, over the weekend, and I expect that any news on that subject will come from Jim Kelly's trip. What we were doing here was exchanging views among the G8 on the subject, as we customarily try to do.
Thank you. Afsane Basipour of Le Monde. Those countries who disagree with bringing the Iranian issue to the Security Council say that it will only make the program go further underground and less accessible. What's your opinion on that? And are there any channels of communications open between Washington and Tehran on this?
Well, we have communications with Iran on a number of issues, Afghanistan, events in Iraq, not through me personally, but through other mechanisms, and those are entirely appropriate, as we've had communication in the case of humanitarian disasters and so on. The issue of what Iran's reaction would be to having their nuclear weapons program placed on the agenda of the Security Council, I think, is something that, of course, we're interested in. But if the reaction were as you suggest, I think that would be strongly corroborative of the weapons-oriented nature of the program and contrary to their public assertions that it's simply for civil nuclear power. They have nothing to hide. It's very easy to demonstrate. That's not been the pattern of behavior they've followed. Yes, sir.
Hajime Ozaki from Kyodo News. About the experiment of the South Korea. What kind of impact do you see these experiments give to be given to the resumption of the six-party talks and the denuclearization of the peninsula? Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I know there's a lot of speculation about that, and many governments in the G8. In our discussions today, indicated that they had told the South Koreans that it was very unfortunate that this had been uncovered and that the timing couldn't be helpful. But I think part of the reaction has been against the mistaken backdrop that somehow the United States and others would try and excuse what we've learned about the events in South Korea. And as I say, while our information is not complete, and while we believe that the South Koreans have been forthcoming and cooperative, the United States is not going to apply a double standard in connection with this issue. We need to learn more about it, and when we do, as I say, potentially by the November IAEA board meeting, we'll consider appropriate action. Our concern for some time with respect to the six-party talks has been that the North Koreans have gone into a stall, to use a basketball metaphor, to avoid having another round before the American elections. We've told them we think that's a mistake. We are prepared, I think the other parties to the six-party talks are prepared to have the next round in Beijing before the end of September, as we had all agreed, and senior Chinese Communist Party official is in Pyongyang over the weekend to make that point to the North Koreans, and I think, as I mentioned, Jim Kelly will hopefully get a readout from the Chinese side the first part of next week. If the analysis is correct that the North Koreans are stalling, I'm not sure that the development in South Korea necessarily has an impact. It's certainly something the North Korean propaganda mills can grind on about, but we're going to treat it seriously in due course, with procedural regularity through the IAEA, and we'll decide what to do about it, not for propaganda purposes, but in the regular order at the IAEA. Yes, sir.
Two questions. First, on the, don't you think is a double, sorry, Javier Barros, La Agencia EFE. Don't you think there is a double standard when you deal with Iran and you deal with Israel, first of all?
And no.
And because tomorrow is September 11, do you still believe that there is weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, and there is any link between Iraq and the terrorist attacks?
Any terrorist attacks in particular?
September 11 attacks.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think our government position on that has been expressed many times, and I'm not going to get into that. I can tell you we didn't discuss that at the G8 meeting today. In terms of what actual weapons might or might not be in Iraq, the work of the Iraq Survey Group continues. Inside Iraq, they continue to investigate reports of weapons being taken out of Iraq in the weeks before and during the actual conflict itself. And I think the most prudent course here is to await the final report of the Iraq Survey Group, and then we'll see what they're able to uncover. Yes, ma'am.
Imogen Folks, BBC. Two questions. First, you said you had bilateral talks with some of the G8 members. I'm just wondering which countries.
All of them.
And second, if the United States doesn't get support, you said you still have a ways to go with this move to put Iran in front of the Security Council. What do you foresee U.S. action would be?
Well, I try and take it one BOG meeting at a time. Board of Governors, we call it the BOG. I take it one BOG meeting at a time. This is our sixth BOG meeting. We think the proper outcome is to go to the Security Council. We're going to keep our persuasive arguments running, and we'll see what happens. When we come to the end of this BOG, then we'll evaluate and decide where to go from there. I want to make sure that everybody who wants to ask a question gets one in first before we go back for second. So you shy people should speak up now. Failing that, why don't we go around the table again this way? Yeah.
I wonder what the U.S. position was on the on whether or not the head of the IAEA has a third term, because I believe he's expressed his interest in staying on.
Yeah, we don't particularly have a reaction at this point. When we have a reaction, I'm sure we'll tell you what the reaction is. Yeah.
Your trip to Israel, Prime Minister Sharon gave a rather strong interview to the Jerusalem Post this week, which recalled the 1981 attack on, at least in the minds of commentators, on Iraq. Do you Is this going to be involved in the possible Israeli reaction to Iranian developments? Is that going to be part of your talks in Israel?
Well, I don't know what Prime Minister Sharon said. I think the focus of the talks is going to be on the upcoming IAEA board meeting, and I'll just leave it at that, I suppose. Yes, ma'am.
Sir, could you explain to me why isn't it a double standard, Iran and Israel? Because I can't get the real logic
sure.
behind
it. Iran provides support for terrorists. It's been on the United States list of state sponsors of terrorism for any number of years. It is conducting a nuclear weapons development program in violation of its obligations under the Non-Proliferation Treaty, and it is conducting a very extensive program to increase the range and accuracy of its ballistic missiles, and has demonstrated that we think that it's a threat to international peace and security. And I think Iran, the case of Iran, is very different from the case of Israel. You know, it's discrimination when you treat two like things in a dissimilar fashion, and it's also discrimination when you treat two unlike things in the same fashion. Yes, sir.
Can we come back to the disarmament initiatives which are now completely jettisoned at the, at Geneva? Namely, what does U.S. think about the Russian and Chinese proposal on PAROS? Where does it stand? Does the old opposition continues as it is, or is there a change rethinking in your mind?
Well, we're not prepared to negotiate on the so-called arms race in outer space. We just don't see that as a worthwhile enterprise. Yes, ma'am.
Did you discuss with Russia the fact that I believe it is helping Iran build a nuclear power plant? Did you discuss this issue? Did you discuss your dismays, or has Russia allayed your dismays about this?
Yeah. Well, we've had many discussions about the Bushehr nuclear power plant over the years, and in particular, we have urged Russia not to ship the fresh fuel for the Bushehr power plant until all of the questions about Iran's nuclear weapons program have been resolved. And in fact, for over 2 years now, that nuclear fuel has remained in Russia and not gone to Iran. And I think it's some indication of the seriousness with which the Russians treat the Iranian nuclear program that you may have seen President Putin's statement at Sochi a week or so ago when he said they do not accept that Iran should become a member of the nuclear club. I think that's another reflection of the depth of the feeling and the strength of the shared objective that we all have that Iran should not achieve a nuclear weapons capability. Why don't I take one or two more? And
may I just follow up on that?
Sure.
Sorry. It's a little off this, but terrorist attacks are growing, horrible ones in Russia. Did you also discuss the leaky nuclear facilities which exist in many of the former republics and Russia itself, and in terms of strengthening those facilities so that, in fact, nuclear fuels doesn't...
Yeah. Well, that's, in effect, that's what the Global Partnership is, a continuation of the Nunn, Lugar, and other American and other programs that over the past 10 or 12 years have expended billions of dollars in an effort to safeguard Russian nuclear weapons, dismantle ballistic missile facilities, and destroy chemical weapons and the like. I think if you asked the Russians, they would say that the risk of a loose nuke in Russia is far greater to them than it is to anyone else. And I think the recent tragedy at Beslan is a good example of the risk that they fully understand, that if terrorist groups are capable of carrying out that kind of operation, how much more horrible it would be if such a terrorist group got a nuclear weapon. I don't think we're aware of any situation where Russia has lost command and control over a warhead. Now, I want to say that it's a problem not just in Russia, but worldwide, that radiological sources of less than weapons-grade radioactive material have not been protected in pre-September 11 days the way they should be now. We have major initiatives that President Bush has launched will be carried through in part next week, week after next in Vienna, at the Global Threat Reduction Initiative that the U.S. and Russia are co-sponsoring. This is something that on a worldwide basis we need to pay more attention to because of the danger that these radiological sources could be exploited to give terrorists the capability of creating a, what we call an RDD, a radiological dispersion device. So this issue is one that that we need to be concerned about on a worldwide basis. Sure.
Who is in the nuclear club now?
We consider that there are five legitimate nuclear weapon states, France, the United Kingdom, China, Russia, and the United States, as indicated in the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty. I think they're the ones that you know about. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much. Have a nice weekend.